Good morning, this is BFM 89.9, 9 December 2021. I am Khoo Soo Chuang with Philip C. We are 13 days away from... No, hang on. 16 days away from... 16 days away from Christmas, Phil. How are you, mate?
Right. I'm doing great. It's such a beautiful morning. Look at the sky. So clear, so beautiful. Although it was raining very heavily this early morning.
Maybe that's why. But before that, markets.
Nespresso, bringing you the perfect blend of global market analysis and insights.
U.S. markets all green. The Dow was up 0.1%, S&P 500 up 0.3%, and Nasdaq also up 0.6%. Now, over across in Asia, the Nikkei was up 1.4%, Hang Seng up marginally 0.06%, Shanghai Composite up 1.2%, but Singapore was down 0.2%, as well as back home, FBM KLCI down 0.3%.
So to get an outlook on markets, we speak to Lee Kian Soon now, CEO of Astral Asset Management out of Singapore. Kian Soon, thank you for talking to us. Now, we've got a lot of questions, especially on the EV space. But before we get to that, what is your impression of where the market temperatures are in terms of the Omicron variant and anxiety surrounding that?
I think the Omicron variant has grabbed the market attention since Thanksgiving. Has created a lot of market jittery as we see that any good news about Omicron virus leads to a market rebound as we've seen in the last few days, while initially any bad news coming out from Omicron variant that potentially could limit travel or the reopening would send the market down. So we're going to witness a bit of this market volatility in the coming weeks as we find out more about this variant.
Yeah, it's very evident because the markets yesterday closed up after Pfizer announced that the booster was very effective, right? Just want to get your perspectives and shift conversation to the trend that is actually a bit more sustainable beyond Omicron, which is electric vehicles. Now, we know that there's intense competition between the US and China, right, as they try and dominate the space. Who do you think will come out on top?
I think if you look at the conventional auto industries, what happens is you end up with a bunch of players spread across globally. You know, you have the traditional European power play, you have the Japanese as well as the American automakers. Even though currently we are seeing just a US-China kind of split, let us not forget that the conventional automakers have not started coming into the EV space big time. They are beating their time because it takes a huge amount of time to build the charging stations and get consumers to, you know, be in tune with an EVs. And I think the era has arrived. We will see that the BMWs, the Merck, the conventional automakers coming in big time now. So even though Tesla is having a huge lead in US and the Chinese players have their own EV automakers, I'm sure the rest of the conventional players, auto players will come in and this will create a huge community and innovation because you need all the players to be pushing the industries to create a safe and viable vehicle for us in the future.
Yeah, so from your perspective as a fund manager, within that sector, would you prefer EV auto companies themselves or the supporting ecosystem, whether it's components or battery makers?
If you look at the EV components, they are actually much lesser than the conventional cars. So the EV components now centered around the EV battery, which is a key component of the electric vehicles. And this industry has also been the attention of most fund managers because the EV batteries, raw materials are actually quite rare, in particular lithium. So as fund managers zoom in, I think the components as well as the batteries will be a key market sector to watch. While at the same time, fund managers are also looking at the assembly of the vehicles, the manufacturing side, and both ultimately will depend on the state of competition. As long as competition increases to a point where profitability starts to decline or where profit margins are very low, then it's time not to participate in that specific sectors because it doesn't make any more sense.
And Ken, so let's shift topic to China and now Evergrande. I mean, we are really in this roller coaster, right? Whenever there's a bond payment due, it just creates so much hesitation and doubt, you know, and now we're seeing this whole barrage of negative news with also Kaiser on board. Do you think they're buying opportunities in this sector?
So ever since the Evergrande debt binge comes into the play, last couple of months, there are a couple of other real estate players that starts to show cracks and get into trouble. So if you are looking at this sector, Chinese real estate, I think it's important to identify companies that are not so highly geared. We have been avoiding companies in these sectors that are so highly geared because it just doesn't make sense, as we know that they'll get into trouble with the debts. So for investors who are very keen to look at, you know, this sector, ultimately it is the sector that will move the Chinese rural to suburban to urban by, you know, providing them with homes. It is highly lucrative, but we should be careful about the amount of leverage this company employ.
Yeah, and Kenson, the MSCI Asia Pacific ex Japan Index, i.e. Asian stocks, is that nearly down 5% this year, while the S&P is up nearly 27%. So why is Asia underperforming America, even after MCOs and movement restrictions have been lifted?
I would say, you know, ultimately, if you know, most people thought that, yes, Europe and United States have moved ahead with this reopening, which is true. They are also ahead in terms of having the vaccine supplies, while Asia is playing catch up. And that causes a bit of lead and lag. But the ultimate reason to explain the MSCI downturn is actually it comprises mainly of five top technology companies. And without surprise, right, we know that Tencent, Alibaba, Meituan has been under regulatory pressure. And their stock prices have corrected massively this year. And that results in a huge hit on the MSCI Asia Pacific index. And it's not because, you know, mainly because the index is top technology heavy, and that's why you see the performance.
Yeah, I think that's why it's evident in the Hong Kong exchange. Now, I want to shift our attention down south here, which is Singapore. Now, they've allowed the listing of SPACs, right? Special purpose acquisition vehicles in September this year. Can I just get your take, what has the take-up been like? Or is the city-state just drawing blanks from the blank check companies?
Okay, SPACs have been very popular, I think, in particular in the year 2020 and 2021. Useful statistics is in United States, around 250 out of 450 IPOs are actually SPACs. That shows the amount of interest that have been generated. And Singapore Stock Exchange has recently announced that they will launch SPACs and getting interest from some of the government-linked venture capital funds trying to sponsor these SPACs, so on and so forth. At the end of the day, I think the success of SPACs in Singapore will be a result of demand and supply. And currently, I would say that, you know, SPAC supplies are way in abundance. As you've seen, there are a lot of, you know, new SPACs are coming out of the United States almost every other day. So, you know, it will be a demand and supply issue where, as a company, if you want to lease, you have choose a SPAC that actually gives you the best valuation and the best access to capital markets. So it's early days. We haven't seen any SPAC in Singapore yet. It's probably going to be launched early next year, given that December is a quiet month for capital markets. And once it's launched, we'll judge and see what would be the response.
Okay, thank you so much for your time. That was Lee Kian-soon, Chief Executive of Astral Asset Management. That's interesting. And of course, I guess our attention really needs to turn towards what's happening in the US, because that's where the markets are going gangbusters. And no other stock has gone more gangbusters than GameStop, right? GameStop is a company which, despite reporting no profits in the last seven quarters, has risen by 822% so far this year.
I mean, it's incredible, but think about it. In early end of 2020, it was like hovering at $16, $17. At its peak, it went up to nearly $300 and it's now settling at about $174. But, you know, besides this gyration in the markets, if you look at its operational numbers, net sales rose 29% to $1.3 billion. Losses were at $1.39 per share compared to an expectation of a loss of 52 cents a share. Its net losses widened to $105 million compared with a loss of $18.8 million a year earlier.
Yeah, of course, a lot of people may not realize as well, but GameStop this time last year was seen as the poster child for the retail stock day trader movement.
Meme.
Yeah. Well, no, memes as well, but I think before that also, in terms of its spiritual beginnings, it was the Robin Hood trading day trader darling, and that was a bit of an up yours to the hedge funders who had basically said, you know, the 1%ers make more money than 99%ers. Here's having to you, kids, or rather, hedge funders.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it, for GameStop? Because you would have thought, yeah, there is a case used for it because it's a classic work from home stock or play from home stock, isn't it?
Yeah. So what happened was the day traders were, you know, busy shorting GameStop, and they had more money ultimately than the hedge funds. Okay. Also, China's Weibo fell 7.2% in its first day of trade in Hong Kong. A little bit like Paytm. Well, also Paytm, but you know, in terms of poor IPO performances, but maybe not as bad as RPTM.
Correct. I mean, this was also the conversation we had with Kian Soon just now about why is it that MSCI non-ex-Japan, it was not doing well. And he was attributing it to China tech stocks that were kind of dragging down the weight. And I think that's reflected in today, where Weibo, which is the equivalent of Twitter in China, really didn't do very well. Now, this was its first homecoming listing by a Chinese firm since DD Global announced last week that it began preparations to withdraw from the US stock exchanges while pursuing a listing in Hong Kong.
Yeah, also, I guess, because China's regulations are clamping down on that VIE structure, which prohibits, you know, Chinese companies from listing in NASDAQ and maybe not having access to that market as a result.
Yep.
The second thing is, of course, Twitter themselves, which is the Weibo US equivalent, is not doing as well in terms of attracting advertising revenues as well as Facebook and YouTube. And we know that Jack Dorsey has left Twitter to join what is now known as Block,
yes,
previously
correct.
Known as Square, right?
Yes, it's gone three-dimensional.